This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Raslan. Today we have a special edition of Viticulture. Special in that we are not in the recording studio. We're using Intertubes technology to be able to communicate. So it's just going to be two guests. And the guest is, he's a writer, he's a director, he is an actor, he is Naam Murad.
Hi, Cam. Good to be, well, at home and talking to you. Did you say two guests, or is it just two of us?
Two people. And Na'a lives very close to me, but we haven't seen each other for several weeks now.
Except for three times on Zoom.
Yeah. Our topics this week will be, topic number one is, well, Contagion movies. Topic number two will be writing in the time of COVID-19.
Now, sounds romantic, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, you tell us. So we're topic number one, Contagion movies. I want to be very flexible with the terminology of Contagion movies. And so, for instance, I very much doubt that we're actually going to talk about the movie Contagion, because I don't want to downplay the situation we're in at the moment with COVID-19. It's obviously very serious. People have died. But on A Bit of Culture, we like to look at the underlying culture in the media and to look at the stories that have been told. So I think it's a good time now to revisit these movies that we've watched in the past that talk about, in a way, talk about the situation we're in now. Kind of see what they got right, what they got wrong, and look at some of the deeper stories that they're telling inside that. So the movie that I'd like to start with, Na'a, it's a favorite of both of us.
Both of us, yeah.
But it's a movie from, oh God, I didn't even look up what year it was.
82, I think.
Right.
Same year as E.T. and Road Warrior.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. Good company.
Those three movies came out at the same time and I was blown away. It was like...
Yeah. Well, the movie is... Great films. That we're going to talk about, first of all, is the director John Carpenter's The Thing. The movie was actually a remake of an older movie from the 1940s, I think.
And 57 or something.
Good thing we got you here.
I might be wrong.
A walking
The Thing
IMDb.
From Another World, though, that one was called.
Right. So just very quickly then, the storyline for The Thing was it's set in Antarctica. It's a research camp that's bedding down for winter. And we actually begin with another research center further down the road run by Norwegians. They've discovered what appears to be a spaceship or some structure. And they've unleashed a microbe of some sort that takes people over and really turns them into monsters. Yeah. And then it goes over and contaminates this American camp. It's a brilliant film. It's terrifying, not just as a horror movie, but as a psychological drama. Don't you think?
Yeah, story about paranoia, about trust, about how people act in stressful situations, in dangerous situations.
But one of the things that I think that it follows through on, which is consistent throughout any Contagion possession type movie or post-apocalyptic movie, is it instantly goes into the idea of a lack of trust. People instantly are battling against each other. They are instantly, all sense of human cooperation is abandoned.
And every man for himself kind of thing, yeah?
At the get-go. I mean, you even go over to a movie like, dreadful movie, like Kevin Costner's The Postman.
Never saw that.
But I mean, everybody, the society just absolutely collapses and everybody hates each other and they're warring and they're killing each other, which is what happens with The Thing. Now, many of the movies we're going to be talking about are American movies, and if this is a cultural trope, then it might be specific to America. But I think one of the things that we've discovered with COVID-19 is actually there's a lot of cooperation. People are actually, I think, more drawn to cooperate than to fight.
Yeah, I think. But it's very fragile. Mm-hmm. It's very fragile because underneath it all, when things break down and go a little bit wrong, I mean, we feel strong in numbers. It's almost a cliche, but you notice that every time there's a breakdown during our current situation, is always somebody who has been pushed into a corner by themselves. They don't have their support with them.
Yeah.
You know, like every time you see somebody who's actually yelling and screaming at a policeman, for example, that person is in a car by themselves. They've lost any feeling of community or support. Yeah, they're pushed against a wall. They, you know, and I feel that's when cooperation breaks down. I think when individuals just lose it, or maybe small groups. We haven't seen that yet, so that's lucky. You know, when small groups feel pushed against a wall, or what they want is not granted, or you know, they feel alienated somehow. That's when there's a pushback. But I think people just want to cooperate. I see that here in Malaysia a lot.
Yes. You know,
people are very cooperative.
I think so. And then if I jump over to another genre, again in the Hollywood US genre, is the zombie genre, where you know, you are bitten and then you become this mindless brain-eating monster. You're neither dead.
And if you're not, then everybody who seems familiar to you at one time is now your enemy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like Cam Razlan could be suddenly this mindless enemy.
Yeah.
Whereas you're just as human, and I know you, and that kind of thing. That's part of a horror, isn't it? It's like it could be your mother going after you.
And then
of course, the dead.
And then there's that transitional moment where there's the guy, usually the guy who's been bitten, and doesn't own up to the fact that they've been bitten, stays inside the community, and then is a contamination.
Goes to
inside.
Get tested and lies. Oh, no.
Yeah.
And will eventually bite your favorite character, right? Will eventually bite the nice old man. You know?
But have you ever watched the TV show Walking Dead?
Yeah, for 3 or 4 seasons.
I watched like the beginning of the first season, and it really struck me how actually the whole premise is based on deep racism, a deep fear of the other. And it looked a hell of a lot like, because you know, zombie is, the word itself is Haitian and is from,
Zuvembi or something like that.
Thing, and actually the imagery, it's so much like a plantation uprising
set in the South and everything,
you know? Set in the South and everything. I think perhaps because it was set in the South, and it was only set in the South because I believe that the state of Georgia gives good tax breaks for filming.
I think it was the original comic, though. I don't quite remember. I've read a bit of the original comic, which is also quite well written. Yeah.
So the when you are bitten, you are reduced to mindless barbarism. You don't understand language or reasoning. You are the absolute other. A zombie is very much like a foreigner.
Yeah. Or somebody with views you can never comprehend or understand.
Because you can't give them...
Well, in this case, there's no views whatsoever, just to eat. But, you know, it's like, to survive, basically.
Well, yeah. Very extraordinarily simple, primal urges, which is what we all too often think that the other is. Again, the word barbarian is from ancient Greek, and it was actually to mimic the sound of how foreigners speak. They go, bar, 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 bar. And that became barbarian.
Are you sure not sheep?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe. They had
dangerous sheep back then.
Like zombie sheep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are just some of the contamination. Like, oh, okay, World War Z. Did you ever watch World War Z?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Hated that movie with an absolute...
Yeah, movie. Started well, though.
Then, when they went to Israel... Then I thought, what the hell? Because Israel likes to portray itself as this country that is under siege by these barbarians.
The entire Arab world, yeah.
Yeah. And then so then our hero goes to Israel, and they're all very heroic in Israel because we've been trained to understand that this is what Israel is, this nation under siege from zombies. I got so angry when I saw that.
Yeah, that was kind of ridiculous. And it was the Israelis who figured out what the problem was and everything. No, not to put down Israelis. I mean, they're showing that the Israelis are organized. They are used to being in a siege, but, you know, that doesn't make them necessarily heroes for that.
No, it doesn't necessarily make them more able to deal with a zombie apocalypse than anyone else. So, Naha, do you agree with my thesis, which is that embedded inside the contamination movie is actually a sense of deep racism?
Yeah, well, zombie films, for sure, for certain, yeah. And not just contamination movies, I think. A lot of the films... Remember, I came on and talked about how in the past 20 years, apocalyptic movies have become the norm, that people are now, they don't really look for happy endings often. Or, you know, the whole idea that you can have a story that proposes the end of the world, in a sense, has become quite normal because we are facing it on a kind of like a daily basis. And I think those films too... talk about the whole idea that of inequality, basically, which racism is one, where in the end it will be a battle between the classes. It'll be a battle between nations, poorer and richer nations. Remember the film A Day After Tomorrow, where the opposite happens, because colder climates, this is like a ice agey kind of climate change kind of thing, where Americans are streaming south.
Yeah.
And the Mexicans close off the border because it's like, hello, you know, look what you did to us. So you get those reversals, you get it's very much based on racism. And I never thought about it this way. I always thought it was more of about culture, about the dehumanizing of culture. But yeah, zombie films, you brought up an interesting theory that zombie films is also about the other, about race. Strongly about the other and about race, you know.
One of the things that's been surprising about this present disaster, COVID-19 disaster, is that with actual contagion movies, there is always the scene where the army, the US Army, come in and they set up overnight these decontamination areas made with these plastic tents and everything. And there's this always this sense of efficiency, great efficiency and preparedness.
Right.
And that's just, it just hasn't happened. It's been quite the opposite. I mean, maybe the institutions are actually prepared, but it turns out that you have one bozo at the top and it can destroy everything.
Absolutely. Or the efficiency happens, but as an afterthought. Like, for example, in our convention center.
Yeah.
It was, they say, oh, why don't we get the convention center people to create a thing? And they did it in 3 days. Yeah. But nobody thought of asking them or giving them the green light or giving them the money to do it.
Yeah.
It's interesting that people are prepared and people are, like you're saying, are people together or they're apart? People are together. But it's the leadership that doesn't know how to use these things, this preparedness or these attitudes to their own advantage. They're just kerfuffling and shuffling and, you know, and I don't even know what Trump is doing at this point.
It's
comic book villainy.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally, you know, I will just lie to everybody's face.
Well, meanwhile,
but you know, Cam, I'm interesting that you should say it's an American thing. But you remember the movie The Host, the Korean film?
I wanted to get on to Korean movies. Actually, they have a very different attitude.
Train to Busan, for example. Yeah,
I haven't been able to find out the word. I'm sure there is a word, a Korean word of a genre, subsets of genres, movies to do with industrial disasters, to do with
societal breakdown kind of thing. Yeah,
the coming plague with always these things happen, and it can be in many different genres. And this is a country, South Korea, that's had probably the best response to COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Their efficiency and preparedness is alongside, say, Taiwan, it's the best. But I think in a way, because it's been in their movies so many times that it's they've been prepared.
Yeah, probably, because The Host, if anybody has seen it, it's about it's not so much about a contagion, but it is about a mutation, like an American experiment. It's based on something that did happen, that there was an American company that used to dump all its test materials after they had used them into that major river in Seoul. I can't remember what it's called. Something, you know, like our Sungai Klang, or Sungai Gombak. It runs right through the city, and it creates a monster, as things tend to do in the Far East. And but as the panic grows and the entire city of Seoul is freaking out because there's a monster in your midst, it then does the opposite. I found it very interesting because it's not so much a monster movie, but it's a movie about Korean families, Korean society and stuff like that. They decided to depict the government as being not so efficient, of not really knowing what to do. And also there's a difference between generations, because South Korea used to be a military government, even a dictatorship, if you want to say so. So there's this different attitudes between the older generation, the boomers, if you will, and everybody else on how to deal with this kind of things. You have boomers trying to bribe policemen and their sons who are, you know, Gen Y or whatever, go like, "I'm sorry, my father is from, you know, the old generation." It's a very good social satire. You should watch it.
It's a good film. It's not my favorite by him, but it's a great film. And you mentioned the generation.
Going off tangent a little bit, what is your favorite by him?
Mother's fantastic. Memories of Murder. Memories of Murder for me. Memories of Murder.
Yeah, that's a fantastic film, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the best ever. I would say with them, Korea is a country that's been historically surrounded by giant forces over which Korea has little control. There's China over there. There's Japan.
USA is in their back. Yeah,
USA. And now there's North Korea, who are Koreans themselves, but just such a crazy kingdom that this genre must be reflective of a constant anxiety felt by Korean society.
It's a culture that lives partially underground out of fear of nuclear attack.
Yeah.
I can imagine what that's like.
Well, we must move on, must wrap this one up. But off the top of your head, we started off with The Thing. What would be your pick of the crop?
Contagion films?
Zombie...
I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but from the top of my head, would be Dawn of the Dead, original version.
Oh, yeah.
Because it put it in a very, very interesting setting of a mall.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just...
the banality of it.
Yeah, but there's also so much to unpack there when you watch it.
Yeah.
What the zombies were doing in the mall and what the heroes were doing in the wall. At one point, you almost had this comparison, and it looked as though like they really are the same thing.
Yeah,
the zombies are just shuffling about and looking at things without knowing, and the survivors, the heroes, were doing pretty much the same thing, but more in a more materialistic, in a more hedonistic way, only an act earlier, like helping themselves to clothes, and you know, whereas the zombies were just trampling through everything. So there's a lot more to it than just a good fun time.
That terrifies
people getting their brains eaten. Yeah.
Scared the hell out of me. That scared the hell out of me, that film. And not just because of the horror aspect, but like the banality of just everyday situation, everyday location. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. Actually, I'll go with that one too. So we're going to take a break though, and we're going to come back with part two, which will be about writing in the age of COVID-19 here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, and Na'a Murad on A Bit of Culture.
Hello.
And now, Na'a,
part
number two, writing in the age of COVID-19.
Yeah, well, it is not something that I expected to do. You know, everybody has their own little pet projects. People have been, you know, learning to do this and learning to cook new things and I don't know, learning how to play the ukulele or whatever. And I did pretty much the same thing. Went on YouTube and wanted to finally learn how to play the djembe, which I had for years. And it worked for a while. I can now bang on it with a bit more confidence, you know, and make sounds which can be considered pleasing. But what else I wanted to do was to attempt to write a book again, because this particular story that's been gestating in my mind and had several versions been written out, once as a book and once, I thought, twice as a book, but I even tried to turn it into a script, which failed just as miserably. And this is a process that's been going on for maybe like 15 years. I don't know. And I thought, okay, I'll just give it another try. There's nothing else for me to do. So I started again, and this time it's working really well. I'm already at 11,000 words. I told myself that in the first 10 months of the, 10 months, it only felt like 10 months. The first month of the lockdown, I was just going to do 10,000 words just to entertain myself and just to see if I could, you know, like make this idea sing, and no pressure. You know how, you should know better than me how difficult it is to get a book published. So that's never really been, you know, my target, but it has become so easy. Ooh, and I enjoy it. And it's the thing I want to do every night. Is seriously, Cam.
I hate you.
Yeah, it is. And I will sit down going, I'm so tired. I'll just do, even if I do a sentence, I'm fine. And I end up staying up longer than I should. And I think I know why that is. It's like in the past, whenever I tried to do anything like this, whether it's a spec script or to try something else like writing a novel, I am constantly hustling to do paid work to try to make money. You know, and if you spend that amount of time doing something which has no real goal, career or money wise, then your brain rejects against it. I mean, like you're aware that I have two completely written scripts, and both of them have not been made into films. Why did I manage those two? Is probably because at that time I was connected with production people, and I was working on a new project who made me feel as though that they would be part of this, that these scripts will be sold. As it turned out, that wasn't the case.
Yeah, but Naa, you are principally a filmmaker. So yeah. A film script is what you should do. You are now venturing into a whole new...
completely different thing. Yeah, so that's why it took less for me to actually sit down and write an entire script without really knowing whether I could sell it or not. And it's a long process. People who've never done it will think like, well, you know, how hard can it be? It is very hard. It is very hard. I mean, like I've done two or three drafts of each of those completed scripts, and I still don't feel that it's totally complete. But you know, the idea of having enthusiastic people around me who were saying like, yeah, you know, we will try to sell it and stuff like that helped. But with a novel, it's like, even people I know, like yourself and my cousin, like who have been published, are like, no, it's one of the hardest things, you know, to do to get in Malaysia to get your work out there.
Oh, no.
But still,
it certainly can be done. But let's just turn this around a little bit and give it a practical advice, because I would say it's really quite possible that at least one of A Bit of Culture's two listeners might well be wanting to write.
Wanting to write?
Well, yeah. I mean, people do, don't they?
I think you have to be philosophical about it, Cam. I think you have to say that I'm writing this for myself, because that's what it worked. I can't give you any other kind of advice, because the truth is, in the end, I wanted to know what happened next. I have several different versions. I have what you would call a blueprint. Two or three different blueprints which I could fall back on if this doesn't work and all that kind of stuff. But I find myself enjoying writing it because I'm surprising myself. I'm going like, hey, why don't I make this happen instead? And as I'm writing it, I'm like, I'm telling myself a good story. And I know that maybe that's not a very practical advice for somebody who actually wants to be a novelist and wants to be a novelist now, because it sounds almost like, you know, it's just self-gratification.
But if you
have an element of that, maybe it'll help.
No, but hang on a second. There is something inside here, though, because it only took a global contagion to get you to write. So you are now...
The fear of death, maybe? I want to leave something behind?
Well, there's enforced inactivity.
Right.
All industries have been closed down. We're in a time out of time. It has to be remembered also, Naa, that neither you nor I have children, so we don't have to entertain or educate kids.
Right.
Feed
yeah,
kids.
My cats. Yeah. But also, I'm glad you brought that up, Cam, because the other opposite is like I was saying, like because I'm so used to having to hustle to do work that makes me money. I couldn't, writing a novel would have been such an irresponsible thing to do. But now I have no choice. There is no paid work in the industry. It's completely been cancelled out. I've sat through several of these Zoom meetings where people are going like, okay, can we do this? Can we do that? And we're realizing that, do you have money for scripts? No, because nobody knows when we're going to shoot. So they're not going to finance it. So, well, then, you know, we're not going to write a script for you because it's not going to make any sense. So things are just not starting. Things have been cancelled. So you're right, enforced. Yeah, it's an enforced thing too.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it's happening.
Oh.
If
we get a novel out of Na'amura, then it was all worth it.
If I don't finish it by the end of the lockdown,
well, what happens?
I'll probably go back to the same thing again. I'll be worried about trying to, every job has to make me money. You know, it doesn't matter if it's creatively, it's a walk in the park, or it's ludicrous, it's a ludicrous concept. I will still do it because I need to pay the bills. But the thing is, Cam, it does help that I do not expect anything from this except for entertaining myself. And also, you said filmmaker, right? Funny thing is, when I first started this thing, right, I was following what my first attempt to write it as a book. You know, like, we've talked about this, how describing things, descriptive writing is one of the things I loved about novels. We talked about Dickens and how London is so evocative the way he's written it, right? And I wanted to do that the first time I wrote it. And I found myself describing things beyond necessary, you know, because I'm coming from a scriptwriter where you describe things perfunctorily so that your set designer roughly knows what to do. So that, you know, go like, they walk into a very big room, there's a lot of light, there are fans or whatever, you know. You do visual descriptions, but prose writing is really hard. I mean, I found that I wanted to do that again this time. Like, try to describe everything. And I thought, like, it's not working. I can't do this. And what saved me was thinking as a filmmaker. What I did was I took a filmmaking trope and I said, why do I go ahead in the story to something that is exciting, something that's interesting, something that will then set a kind of tone. So when I go back to describe who these people are and all that, they're already expecting this to happen within a certain amount of time. You know, it's like when you watch those series and it's like you start off with the heroes climbing up to the top of a building and things are on fire and somebody's is about to be possessed by the devil. And then it stops and it goes 3 weeks earlier.
Yeah, yeah. The inciting incident, I think, would be the...
You go straight to the incident. Yeah. Not even the inciting, you go straight to the point of no return kind of thing. Or maybe like into the second act already, right? Just to tease them, because then you're allowed to have slightly more leisurely inciting incident first act, because then you've already shown them where it's going.
Yeah. Well, now...
I did that trick. Yeah.
Well, now, we have to move on, though, unfortunately. But... I mean... I hate you for this, by the way, because I, on the other hand, have been, I'm catatonic during this period. I've been unable to, muster that. So this morning I thought, hey, I'm going to be like, I'm going to get up early and I'm going to write. And it didn't really happen. But
that's the thing, because this is an alien thing to me. For you, it's something that you do and you have so much expectations for, because you are a writer, you've had two books. And the thing is, your expectation is, I need to have another book, a better book, or finish this great book that I'm already doing. Whereas for me, it's like, if I fail, what the hell? Nobody knows me as a novelist. And I don't even expect it to be a novel.
Well, then that would be the advice.
Maybe you should try painting then.
Yeah.
Something, get some canvas, paints.
Well, that would be something the thing. That would be the thing for our listener who wants to write, which is, it really does help if you have no expectations and no pressure on you, and you write and enjoy it.
Do something else that you really have no expectations for, that you think you'll enjoy, whether it's basket weaving or tai chi. Just do it.
But we're gonna move on though. We're gonna move on, and good luck, by the way. And get back to you when it's done. We're gonna go to recommendations. We're gonna recommend something that we think might be of interest, and I go first. My recommendation is, so last week I talked about reading Charles Dickens, and I've been carrying on reading Charles Dickens. I'm now on a new book, well, it's new for me, it's a very old book, David Copperfield, which is in a way his most kind of, it's a novel, it's fiction, but it's his most sort of autobiographical.
And, yeah, epic, isn't it?
Yeah, and I can't, I mean, I'm well into the book, I'm nearly halfway through, and I can't really say for sure what it's about, because it's just like, this episode leads to this, to that, it's like, there's no overarching, it's not like a Bond movie, where it's really clear, you know, you've got to go and find Blofeld and blow up his HQ.
Maybe that's what I was trying to say, the randomness of life.
Yes.
Where life takes you, right?
Yeah. But one of the things that David Copperfield is about, I guess, that really he studies, is women, is the position of women in Victorian society. I mean, he saw it as just the position just of women in society. But it's a real opportunity to, there are so many female characters there, and there are male characters who are manipulating them. And it reminded me of gaslighting, the term gaslighting, right, which we're all familiar mm-hmm. with now, I think, where you, usually men, do or say things to usually women to persuade them that they're insane. And so my recommendation actually...
Keep them in fear.
Yeah, my recommendation actually is to go and watch the original movie that the word came from. And the movie is called Gaslight. It was actually a play before that in 1938. And then a British movie was made in 1940, starring one of my favorite actors, Anton Walbrook. And it's a really good
film. I've never heard of.
you've seen him and stuff. He was Austrian.
I'm sure I have.
Yeah. Life and Death of Colonel Blimp and a bunch of others. And he the movie is very sinister, the way that this man persuades his wife that she's gone insane by turning down the gaslight in the house. Mm-hmm. So she is convinced that she didn't turn it down. Time and time again, he says, "Why did you turn the gaslight down?" And she said, "But I didn't. I'm sure I didn't. I didn't do it." And he is in cahoots with the housemaid. They want to drive her insane. And it's a really clever, very sinister.
I've seen the remake with Ingrid Bergman and James Mason. I think.
No, Eric Boyer. Eric Boyer. And then there was a Hollywood remake.
Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, had a Hollywood remake just 4 years later. And it's also one of the few movies where you get a chance to see very good depictions of late Victorian life. So I really enjoyed that movie, if that's the right word. So people nowadays are throwing around the word gaslighting.
Exactly. Without knowing where it came from.
Go find out where it came from. It's actually quite an easily available movie on the internet.
It is a very good movie. I saw the remake, and very effective, very Hitchcockian.
Mm.
It's strongly evocative of something which has been going on, you know.
Yeah.
In marriages and now in society in general.
Yeah, exactly. It'll remind you, male or female, it'll remind you of how it's been done to you. Everybody, even if you do it to other people, it also has been done to you.
Especially here in the East, where you know, superstition is a big thing. Uh-huh. Where even as children or even as young people, you are gaslighted about the supernatural in order to manage your behavior. Don't go out because at this time of night, because you know this hantu will get you, or that hantu will get you. It is gaslighting too, in a sense. You're in fear of things which are not there, but you know, yeah, it's been put into your head by an outside source. Yeah. Anyway, okay, my turn, right?
So my recommendation is go watch the original movie Gaslight. What do you got?
Remake. Just watch the remake, because Ingrid Bergman is so beautiful. Yeah. Well, okay, mine is, I haven't actually even watched a lot of stuff, but I've read a lot. I've taken this time to read. I figure, you know, like, if I'm going to write something, I might as well read. And I talked about, in the last time I visited you, about the thing that I was reading early on before the CMO, which was, you know, Wallace's book. Alfred through the Malay archipelago and what he saw there.
Malay Archipelago by Alfred Russel Wallace. Yeah.
So three books. One is Philip Pullman's Book of Dust, number one, which is La Belle Sauvage. And people would say, like, yeah, we know about Philip Pullman. We know about his Dark Materials trilogy. Why should we read a prequel if we haven't read the original thing? This is actually a great place to start, because aside from the fact that it deals with the main character from the Dark Materials trilogy, Lyra, she's just a baby, so it's about her origin, but it's not really about her as much as about what was going on in that version of Britain that Philip Pullman has created, which is a vision of Europe, which is under the thrall of the magisterium, which is sort of like a religious authority that after their version of World War I, I think, has pulled Europe together under this autocratic religious rule kind of thing. It's an interesting world. It's a beautiful world. It's his version of Oxford. It will surprise you because it's a spy thriller and it's a fantasy and it's science fiction all in one. So that's number one. And if you read this, you don't need to read the trilogy, but it's a great gateway to get into the trilogy because it predates the trilogy. Or you can just read this and never read the trilogy, which is fine too.
But can I ask you a question? You know me. I know you. I've never read this Dark
Materials trilogy.
Dark Materials thing. I'm kind of familiar with it. Would I like it?
That's the thing. I don't think you'll even like my book. I'm not saying that you won't like it, but it won't be something that it would be natural to you. Right. You know, it's like even the nicest pool. If I was to tell you, do the front crawl and you'd rather do the breaststroke, you'd be like, yeah, you won't enjoy it.
Okay, so, all right.
But I think you might, if you were patient enough to pick up on what, on the larger picture, on the bigger picture and all the different meanings behind what he's created. You might enjoy it. Do you like Dune, for example?
No, I never read it. I know it. Yeah. But, all right, so So what are your other books, just have one recommendation.
You do a lot of editing at you.
Yeah, only one recommendation. So you got to pick just the top one. We don't want just a list of what you did on your holiday.
Just very briefly, Pramodia's early book, The Fugitive, because you see proto writing. I mean, he's. You see a lot of his themes, but the story is almost naive in a sense that it is so. It's very static. It's very full of repetitions, and it's almost corny and theatrical in its scenes, which is something that he didn't have a problem with later when he did his Buru Quartet and all that kind of stuff. But it's really very interesting to see a young writer. He's one of his earlier books and how he handled that. So it's called The Fugitive by Pramodia. Right,
but this is the great Indonesian author, Pramodia. You read it in English, did you? Or
it's in English. I so difficult to get his books in original Indonesian.
Yeah.
And also, thirdly is a book I've read before, but a book which I thoroughly recommend, which is Tom Wolfe's The Right Stuff.
Oh.
Because he really puts the history of that time in context.
This is rather the space, than the space race, the 1950s.
Yeah, you look at it. You look at it as an apple pie, flag waving American thing, but he goes deeper into what it meant for America as a culture, as a whole, the world, it was part of the arms race, really, rather than, you know, they called it a space race, but it was really part of the arms race. And also about the entire military way of thought, Air Force, Navy, Marines, how they saw each other, themselves, and how they saw civilians in general and vice versa.
Yeah.
The heroism, the condescension, it's very, 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 very interesting. It's a very interesting book and very well written, very funny, you know, Tom Wolfe style, right? He takes a very serious subject and he's writing about it in a very pop, cool, hip kind of way.
Mm.
But the facts are there.
Well, you know, your three books cover all the bases. and that's three recommendations. So next time you're on, you have no recommendations. Because that's why you've used them up.
Because it's the hardest thing for me is to do the recommendations, you know, Cam. I can find a topic easier than finding a recommendation.
Yeah. Well, that's how it is. We like to make it hard. So, well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. And so, well, thank you, Na'a. And
thank you again,
myself, Cam Rasslan. So please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.